All right, nice to have you back with us on a beautiful day for baseball today, Giants and Marlins. We welcome in Rich Walsh. And Rich, of course, we love having you on the show. How are you?
Hey, Marty, how are you?
We're doing fine. And for some reason, look, you did the Marlin games for years with Tommy Hutton. The Giants go to Miami, and there's always trouble. And we even have Justin Bour now with the Giants, and they still can't beat the Marlins.
I love Justin Bour. What a good dude he is. I think you've got Todd Hollingsworth on the show a little later on. You might want to ask him about the division series and the Giants and JT Snow and Pudge at the plate with the Marlins. So it goes back a while, right? I mean, the Marlins came to San Francisco and won a postseason series too. I don't know. I can't explain it. I mean, even when the Marlins were bad and the Giants were really good, the Marlins usually came into San Francisco and had good series. I think some of that had to do with they had a lot of California players on, and all those California players loved coming to the West Coast. They always had good series, and guys like Yelich and Stanton in San Diego, San Francisco, and L.A. So I can't explain it. But
very good point.
It continued last night, that's for sure.
Yeah, coming home. Good point. I hadn't thought about that. And those players, of course.
How does that sit in the Lurie family tree, though, is what I want to know. Because your sisters are huge Marlins fans in Miami. You started out in Miami and had a terrific legal career before you arrived in the Bay Area. Well, there's got to be a little tug and pull in terms of rivalry within the family, right?
A little bit. Renee and Marilyn love listening to you and Tommy, and of course they watch all the games now. It's something that they love the Marlins, and for me, growing up in Miami, I got to see the Miami Marlins in the International League and Satchel Paige and all these different players play. So there's still, I look at that Marlin uniform and I still have that little bit of feeling for him. But, you know, that's what we love about baseball, is that it connects generations and families, and it's a beautiful part of baseball. So how did you get involved with broadcasting? I don't think you've ever told that story. Who were some of your mentors that got you involved?
Oh, wow. Well, look, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I was a college baseball player, and I didn't really want to be a broadcaster, and I didn't grow up wanting to do it until I got to the end of my senior year at UC Davis. And I'll tell you, two guys that really inspired me that gave me the idea that I could do it were Crook and Kite, not from them being in the booth, but they had these, 5 to 10 minute radio shows on KNBR when I was in high school and when I was in college. And I used to listen to them and think, yeah, these guys are really funny. And they're going to make great broadcasters. This is something that I might want to do. And I was lucky. You know, I got inspiration from, certainly once I started doing it, from the guys I grew up listening to. And the Bay Area had such great voices, Bill King, Lon Simmons, Hank Greenwald, all of that. One guy that was a terrific help to me was Ted Robinson growing up. I had no experience, didn't take a class in broadcasting, did some stuff on the student station at Davis, and the only job I could find out of college was doing minor league hockey in Spokane, Washington. And so I sent a letter to Ted. He was doing the A's on TV, and he was at, I think, KCBS at the time. And he answered the letter, and he just invited me to lunch. He was just a terrific mentor to me. And he gave me a tape, because I'd never seen a hockey game in my life in person. He gave me a tape of him doing a North Stars game on radio early in his career. And so as I drove to Spokane to become a hockey announcer, I listened to that game probably 7 or 8 times. And so I knew how to do hockey by the time I got there. He was a guy that helped me along. I was really fortunate. When I climbed through the minor leagues and I got to Las Vegas, I became the partner to Ken Korak. And Ken and I were a team in Las Vegas for 3 years. Wow. He really taught me how to be a professional baseball broadcaster. Because I was still an ex-player when I got there, who had done 3 years in the minor leagues. But I still thought like I was an ex. And Ken really showed me, how to talk to pitching coaches and managers, how to use that in the broadcast. We ran a really a major league type broadcast in Las Vegas, and I'm just so lucky that I was able to work with Ken, and I'm so proud of all the stuff that he's done over in Oakland. But yeah, I mean, by the time I got there, then I started thinking back of all the games I listened to with Bill King and Hank and Lon Simmons, the sense of humor that Lon had and Hank, King's incredible ability to paint pictures and you know, capture the moment with that staccato delivery and all that. So those were kind of the people that helped push me along or inspired me when I, at age 22, I guess it was, when I decided that it sounded like more fun than going to law school and I wanted to try to make a living at it.
Mm, boy, what a great story. I ended up in law school, then I did this, so I went the other way. Great story. The captain, Ken Korak, always glad to hear something about him. Rich, you know, looking at this, one thing I did want to say before we leave that area, I learned a lot from you, and I've told you this over the years. When you did the Seattle Mariners pregame show on TV, you did it on the field. You had people walking in front of you, behind you. There was always some sort of chaos going on. And I've done so many shows publicly at the Public House and also when I did it at the Oakland Coliseum with people all around me talking. And I said, boy, Rich handled it so well that I learned from you. So I just want to throw that out there.
Wow, that's very nice. I appreciate that. I remember those days. one of my star guests when I was a pregame host in the American League West was a young writer named Susan Slusser. And she used to come on the show, and she was my favorite guest because she's so good. And again, there's another person that has just gone on to incredible great things. And it's interesting to see her go from the A's to the Giants because I read her stuff religiously.
Oh, we have her on every couple of weeks. It's always beautiful to have Susan on. I enjoy that. All right, let's talk a little Marlins baseball. Today, Sandy Alcantara.
Sure.
Came over in the Ozuna trade with a couple of others that I mentioned. He goes against Aaron Sanchez. What can we expect with Alcantara today?
Well, Alcantara, I think how you go. Just think
okay.
Contra Costa County.
Got it, Alcantara.
You'll be okay. Yeah, you'll be okay there. Look, he's of all the trades that the Marlins made with the new regime, this was the trade that probably has brought them the most. And Alcantara's a big piece of it. That's the Ozuna trade. You know, Yelich, Stanton, Real Muto. But that trade with the Cardinals seems to have been the best, at least up until this point. This guy's their ace. I mean, he's and really a hidden star. He was an all-star in 2019. He beat the Cubs in the wild card series last year. 98-mile-an-hour fastball, slider, changeup. Doesn't give up many home runs. In fact, I don't think he's given up a home run this year. Left-handed hitters. He's really good against lefties as well. They struggle against him. So this is a guy that he's their guy. And the Marlins are hot now, and they're doing it with some timely hitting, but pitching. Their bullpen's been really good after a shaky start to the week. They've got good starters. So they're doing it with pitching, and they popped a couple out of the park yesterday, and that's kind of how they're doing it. And this is a guy that I think the Giants are going to have to be on their game certainly today.
Sandy Alcantara. It was my spelling that got me off of the track.
No,
that.
I had
spelling.
The same thing when they got him. I was the same way. I first started with how do we do that? And then Contra Costa County is the best way to think about it.
I got it. Alcantara.
There you go.
I wrote it down. 18 and a third innings, no homers given up. Lefties 2 for 26. So, Rich, you're absolutely right about Alcantara right now. Now, tomorrow, Alex Wood gets activated. Now, he's a lefty that has to go against that tough Marlin right-handed lineup, and they chewed the Braves up pretty good. Max Fried, they knocked all over the place, a good pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But Alex Wood pitches tomorrow for the Giants. And he will go against Pablo Lopez. But when I think of Alex Wood, I think of Jose Fernandez. When Alex Wood came up with the Braves, Rich, Alex Wood and Jose Fernandez would hook up in amazing pitching duels. You remember any of those?
Yeah, I mean, one in particular, and it was maybe the best pitched game, one of the best pitched games I've ever seen. I don't know if it's 13 or 14, but Jose and Alex Wood, there were 28 strikeouts and no walks.
Wow. In
the game. And Fernandez, they both went 8 innings. Fernandez struck out 14. Wood struck out 11. And I think it was I don't have the dates, but it was the most strikeouts without a walk since like the early century, you know, 1900s type. That game, I just remember just being just like, this is the best, you know, one of the best games I've ever seen pitch. Now, I did the Halladay perfect game, and Josh Johnson was spectacular in that game, and obviously Halladay was perfect. But those two games together are the two best pitch games that I've called in the major leagues. That was quite a night. And Fernandez, you know, it's funny, we just talked about Alcantara. Obviously, Fernandez's death was a huge tragedy, but it changed the trajectory of the organization because without him, the team tried to, in 2017, piece together a rotation. They made some trades and unfortunately traded away some good young arms to get some veterans, and it didn't really work out. And that, I think, kind of led to the 2018 dismantling of a team that had just a ton of homegrown talent. Fernandez obviously was homegrown as well, but I've always liked Alex Wood. He's always one of those guys that, you know, the first time you saw him throw, you knew right away why he was good, and that was his delivery. There's enough funk and enough weirdness in his release point that hitters just, you know, have a hard time with that. And he's got good stuff too, but you add those two things together. I've always liked watching him pitch or calling games when he has pitched.
Yeah, I agree. It messes up your timing because you're ready to load and ready to swing, and all of a sudden there's a stop in the middle of the delivery. Kershaw does that, and we've seen a lot of other pitchers do that. So, yeah, that is something. Hey, Pablo Lopez tomorrow. Now, he got whacked around pretty good by Atlanta the other day. What do we know about Pablo Lopez?
He's kind of a workhorse guy. He's an under-the-radar. Look, about everybody on that Marlins team is an under-the-radar guy. He's been in the rotation, I think, since 18. He doesn't walk a lot of people. Fastball, curveball change is his repertoire. And last year, it's funny, you make a reference like this to last year, and it just sounds weird, right? But he was a workhorse last year. He made 11 starts. And then it's like, oh, yeah, there were only 60 games. But he made 11 starts. In what was a strange year for the Marlins last year, 25 years old. Whereas Alcantara it goes fastball slider, Lopez is more of a curve. He's got a really good chase rate too. Guys have a tendency to chase on him. So he's part of a pretty good, young, solid rotation that Miami's got.
Boy, we'll see him tomorrow. Before we let you go, Jason Stark had an interesting article this week about some proposed rule changes in the Atlantic League, which is sort of the proving ground for a lot of the rule changes that baseball would like to see. And I want to throw one at you. And I brought this up before. In fact, I brought it up to your friend Ken Korak, and he sort of laughed at me when I said it. I said, move the mound back a foot or two. And you'll get different results, and they've done all sorts of scientific studies and this and that. And apparently the Atlantic League in the second half of the season is going to push the mound back to 61 feet, 6 inches. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I like the fact that they are trying stuff out in the minor leagues. And part of the impetus is Theo Epstein and his role with Major League Baseball. So, I struggle with trying to figure out how this is going to affect things, but the one visual that I get in trying to figure this out is, okay, rather than moving the mound back in your mind, let the hitter go a foot behind the back line of the batter's box, because that's essentially what you've got is an extra foot. So what's the result of a hitter, you know, setting up with that back foot a foot behind the back line? Well, that's going to be what 61 feet, 6 inches is. Does it diminish fastball velocity? No, and fastball velocity has climbed dramatically, but it should affect perceived velocity, which is, you know, how quickly does a ball get in on you. I like the experiments. The other rules that I'm interested in are the base running rules, and that's that in low A, they're doing the step-off rule. They're going to experiment with that, whereas a pitcher has to step off clearly before making a pickoff throw. And then there's that rule where you have two step-offs or pickoffs per plate appearance. So if you got a base dealer at first, you can only step off twice. And then I thought, okay, I read that rule. I thought, okay, what happens the third time? Or can you even throw over to the third time? How do you control a guy from going? And the rule as it's written, or they're going to try it, is the third time you try a pickoff, if you don't pick them off, it's a balk, and the runner gets the base. So, look, I'm all for trying out the rules and trying to you know, add a little more you know, a little more small ball back in the game and speed and athleticism. I think if you watch the game last night, the Dodgers and the Padres, there's a lot of that. I mean, right? I mean, that was an amazing game, and the extra inning rule came into play last night as well. So I'm into it. I think Theo Epstein's a bright guy, and I applaud the fact that Major League Baseball is trying to give some of these things a try and see how they affect the game.
Oh, I love it. Rich, great to have you on. It's always a pleasure to talk ball with you. We'll do it more often, and we'll follow your career. And if it's football, baseball, basketball, there's somewhere on TV, you will be somewhere. So we appreciate it, and have a great day.
Marty, I appreciate it. Good luck to the Giants today, for sure.
Okay. All right. That is Rich Walsh. More coming up. Bill Lasky will be back with us. We'll talk a couple of the rule changes with Bill and a little bit of that game last night, Dodgers in San Diego, 12 innings, 11-6 Dodgers, and it was back and forth, and it was a game, let me tell you, not just walks and strikeouts last night. All right, you're listening to 104.5 KMBR and 680, the sports leader.